The best motivation always comes from within. Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of the Sports for Champions podcast. Today I'm joined by Misha McNeil. How are you today, Misha?
I'm great, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. So fantastic to have you here. Obviously Team GB bobsleigh, some great success over the last few years. I'd like to start, if we could, how did you first get into bobsleigh?
Yeah, so I got into bobsleigh very different than anyone else. Most people just come from another sport and transition over and take the skills that they've been training on for years and bring them over to bobsleigh. But for myself, I was still in school at the time and I was into all things sport. But we got invited to a Try Something New Day. So we travelled down to Beedale, which is in North Yorkshire, and a woman called Nicola Minicello, who was world champion at the time, she represented Great Britain, she took the session and taught us a bit about bobsleigh and taught us how to push the thing, and we were just giving it a go. And at the end of the session, she said, you know, it looks like you have potential in this sport, why don't you come to trials? So I think it was a few weeks later, I went down to Bath and trialled and got invited to be on the Great British youth team. And that's how I got into the sport.
That's such a quick turnaround from obviously, presumably, never having heard of bobsleigh. Is that something that you'd
experienced? Yeah, I'd never heard of bobsleigh before. Before the taster day, I'd never seen a bobsleigh. You know, people said, have you not seen Cool Runnings? I said, no, I had knew nothing about it. I watched a few YouTube videos and just went for it. And it was a quick turnaround, but I got into the sport at probably the right time because it was 2010, 2011, and the Youth Winter Olympic Games was in January 2012. So I got to kind of go out and do some driving on ice and get to know the sport and had maybe 18 months to prepare for a Youth Olympic Games where we won a silver medal. And that youth silver medal was kind of my ticket to transition onto the senior programme.
That's amazing. So what were the initial skills that they were looking for in that first sort of taster session?
We went through like a series of different tests. So there were some sprints, some jumps, and then pushing the sled. Bobsleigh is a sport where you just need to be as powerful as possible. So kind of testing power outputs, but you also need to be a bigger athlete. You can't be really slim and petite because it is a sport which is really centered around weight. You have to push a heavy sled and there's a maximum weight and you need to be weighted up to the maximum. So if you're too light, you end up having to push extra weight. So the idea is to have as much weight as possible on your body to push a lighter sled.
Oh, so similar to horse racing where the horses that are higher up in the rankings are handicapped. So you put like lead bricks in the sled.
Yeah, so if you are not near max weight, you have to add lead or kind of metal blocks into the sled, yeah.
That's amazing. So from trying out on a sort of Try Something New Day to sort of a couple of months later turning up at GB Youth, how was that?
It was very unexpected, but I was, you know, 16, 17 year old, and I was absolutely loving every minute of it. Obviously I'm now going away traveling in the winter, getting time off school, thinking it's absolutely brilliant. It was great, and obviously that competition going so well set me up to carry on in Great Britain, and it was a decision that I kind of made after that to say, right, I'm going to fully dedicate myself to this sport now, and that's when I went, right, I want to make a senior Olympic game.
So that was the GB Youth Worlds back in 2017?
That was the Youth Winter Olympic Games in 2012.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. So quite a big gap then, and obviously, I think it was almost the precursor to everything that followed, winning that 2017 Worlds. Do you remember how that felt?
Yeah. So winning the Junior World Championships in 2017 was, you know, probably one of my. It was probably the greatest achievement at the time, and it's definitely still up there with one of my greatest achievements. And yeah, that was kind of pre-Olympic year, so we were spending a lot of time on World Cup and qualifying for the Winter Olympics the following season. But that was a competition that I kind of pulled off World Cup for to go to and say I really want to be a junior world champion, and yeah, it went well.
Sorry, was that the first time that you kind of realised that this is definitely for me, I'm going to take this professional and kind of really focus in on it?
No, I knew before that. I knew from 2012, where I kind of had a decision to say, you know, I was 18 at the time, do I want to go and, you know, start a career, get a job, go to university, what do I want to do? I had a place at university and I thought, no, I just want to give, you know, full time to this sport, full time training, and completely committed everything to bobsleigh to eventually make the senior Winter Olympic Games, which was in 2018.
We definitely made the right decision. Obviously, going into the Olympics, there's a lot of buzz around your performance at the 2017 Worlds. And then first, there's a strange decision by the powers that be to remove funding from the women's section of the sport.
Yeah, so that's exactly it. Everything was going very well. We'd qualified for the games. We won junior world championships. And 5 months out, the British Federation just pulled the plug on the women's programme and said, we're not funding you any further. Obviously, I went and tried to argue my case and asked why. And there was a lot of, you know, unanswered questions. And it was in that moment where I had the decision to make, do I just quit and give up now, or do I do something about it? And that's when I went to the media and kind of told my story and started a crowdfunding page, and yeah, had an absolutely amazing campaign called Powered by the People, where everyone fundraising kind of got us to the Olympic Games.
That's an incredible achievement. And just to put it into context, 5 months out from the Olympic Games, you're already qualified, and that's when they made the decision to pull the funding. How would that make you feel?
I was absolutely heartbroken, like so gutted. Obviously, as I've just mentioned, from you know, being involved from 2010, 2012, giving it my absolute everything and saying this is what I want to do, to get all the way through to 2017, doing everything that I could do, to have it all kind of just took away, I was absolutely heartbroken. But I'm that character that says, no, I'm going to do something about it. And we did, went out and done something about it, and it's been absolutely amazing. You know, we went out to North America and raced in the World Cups and then come back to Europe before travelling to the 2018 Winter Olympics, all self-funded from Powered by the People campaign, from, you know, corporate sponsors getting behind us and supporting us. And at the 2018 Winter Olympic Games, we made British history there, with, you know, the highest finish for the women's bobsleigh ever. And it was, you know, it was a really proud moment to know that, you know, we've achieved something of that standard from having to absolutely fight and scrap and get ourselves there.
It really can't be ideal for preparations. Obviously, you're spending a lot of time talking to the media, checking on your crowdfunder page. So I think you originally set out to cover the costs of going to compete in the run-up to Olympics to keep your place, and then you actually exceeded what you were originally looking for. Where did a lot of the donations come from? Was it sort of big donors, or was it tend to be individual people?
It was a lot of individual people. There was a couple of really generous donations on the crowdfunding page, but most of it was 10, 20, 50 pounds, all adding up. And we wanted to get £30,000, and that would cover us doing the bare minimum to get to the Olympic Games and keep our kind of world ranking spot, because that's one thing that you do, even though you're qualified, you do have to have a world ranking going in. So we thought we'd do a couple of races, get a world ranking, and we can go. But it completely exceeded expectations, and I think, well, we made the target of 30,000 within 6 days, and we went on and ended up with £48,000, which meant we could do so much more with our season. You know, we could have coaches, get physio, you know, go to more races than we planned to go to, and just allowed us to have a more prepared season. And it was a very hard transition, particularly for myself. I've gone from being a full-time athlete, being spoon-fed, had everything done for me, to now, like you said, I'm speaking to sponsors, speaking to media, sorting out finances, budgeting, planning logistics, I'm booking hotels, I'm entering us into races, I'm organising my team, and it was just, you know, completely flipped on its head. But it was, you know, a huge experience, and it's gave me a lot of valuable life lessons and skills, and it's something that I've now carried on for the last 5 years of my career. I've continued to be self-funded. We've got some absolutely amazing sponsors, and it's, you know, I still book the hotels and plan the races and do all the budgeting now. So
it's only through putting ourselves in those kind of difficult situations where we do kind of grow and learn new things. So I'm wondering, obviously, having basically been the driving force yourself to get you both to the Olympics, how was it when you actually arrived there and you kind of the feeling of I've actually done this, as opposed to kind of, as you say, being spoon-fed?
Yeah, it was an amazing feeling, but I think it was almost surreal. We'd spent so much time focused on getting there, and then the journey of getting there, that when we were actually there, it didn't really feel like real life, but had an absolutely fantastic time, and and we had a great, you know, achievement from that competition, and carried that through into the remainder of my career.
Brilliant. So from there, obviously having a record-breaking performance at the Olympics, you then went on to medal silver in the World Cup. How was that?
Yeah, so fast forward quite a few years after that, to January just gone, we won a silver medal at the World Cup in Latvia, which was absolutely incredible. It was a track that I'd never been on before. I had no experience, well, I had very limited experience. I had about 10 training runs the year before, but I'd never raced on that track. So I'd never had any race experience. All I'd had was 10 runouts down there. So yeah, going there, I knew that I really enjoyed driving the track, but we just kind of went out there. And after the first heat, we were sat in third place, and Adele and I were like at the bottom, so excited. And I had to say to Adele, my teammate, who's my brake woman, don't get overexcited. We've still got another heat to do. So we're like, right, just do the same again. And we went back up to the top of the track, and for heat two, because bobsleigh is over two heats and it's a combined time, so you do have to have an element of consistency in your performance. And yeah, we went back up, we pushed harder, went faster, tried to drive better, and yeah, come out at the bottom, and we were in first place, which meant we'd guaranteed a bronze medal. So we stand at the bottom of the track, and the sled that then was to come for the silver medal position crashed on the track, which meant we were upgraded to a silver medal. And you know, it was one of those moments where you're like, someone's crashed, that's not good, hope they're okay. But in that moment we were like, oh my, this is such a hard track, and we've had so little experience, and this was mine and Adele's first race together ever, that we were just absolutely ecstatic to do that.
How is it driving on different tracks? So I know you see Formula One drivers and they'll maybe like, you'll see them in the locker room before they go out, like sort of visualising the track. Yeah. Is that something that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So every track's different around the world. It has different number of corners. They have a different combination of turns and they have different speeds, different gradients. And every track's different. So the most important thing to do as a driver is to know the track inside out. When we're at our top speed, we're covering about 30 meters per second, which if you want to put it as a visual, like visualize the length of a basketball court, in 1 second we're going from one end to the other, and it's not in a straight line, you're going around corners, so you have to be so alert, so switched on, but you have to know your stuff. So I walk the track before any training session and every race. I'll walk the track with my coach and kind of look and assess the track. Has anything changed on the track? Talk about what I've done in the last session, how we can improve it, or what I've done well and what we're going to do again. And just know everything you can about the track. And then it's a case of when we are in the changing rooms, I do visualise the track in my head, just so that when I go to the start block, it's just so fresh in your mind. Because if you've drove a track 100 times, if I just walk up to the start line now, not walking the track, not visualising the track, and go, you're going to do fine. And I've been driving for 10 years. I'm not going to be dangerous. I'm going to get to the bottom and I'm probably going to drive the track pretty well. But we're in a sport that's won and lost with hundredths of a second. So it's about being so on the money that there's no room for errors. So just doing everything you can, and visualization is a great technique in our sport to make sure that that's what you're doing.
There's so many tiny little variables, I imagine, that goes into it. So just to give us a little bit of a better idea, say for example, if you're going into a fairly harsh corner, how are you preparing yourself physically?
If I am about to go into a harsh corner, the only thing that I do is I take a deep breath in before you go into it, because if there's a lot of pressure, we can be hitting 5 G's. Wow. It pushes the air out your lungs, so the last thing you want to do is not have any oxygen in your body. Most of the time it's about being relaxed as possible. You don't want to be tense when you're driving the sled, because everything you want to do needs to be smooth and round. You never want to steer harshly unless you're in a dangerous situation that you need to get out of. And any harsh movements, any abrupt steering actually slows you down. Because if you think about trying to go as fast as you can, and we have 4 runners on the sled, and if you're traveling straight and the runners are in line, you're going to go fast that way. And every time you turn the sled, the runners turn. So you're actually creating friction, which slows you down. So you want to do as little steering as possible, and you want to do it as smooth and gentle as possible. So just trying to be relaxed is the main thing.
Yeah, the least amount of resistance possible. Yeah. And how does the track change over the course of the racing? Presumably, say for example, if you're last, you're going to experience a different track to the people who've gone first.
Absolutely. So weather can affect a track massively, but as every sled goes down, the track degenerates, the ice breaks down and becomes slower. So in a race, ideally it's a random draw. You want to be drawn in the top kind of 10 sleds at least. Ideally you want to be sled kind of 3 to 12 to get like optimal ice conditions, because as soon as the track starts breaking down, it starts slowing down. So the track can change during the race. If the weather changes, it can also change. If it starts snowing, it will slow you down. If it's kind of, there's a lot of moisture in the air, sometimes frost can form on the track, again it will come down to runner choice. So you need to pick the right runners to go on the sled for the weather conditions that you have. And you know, it's nothing like Formula One, but Formula One's probably the easiest thing to compare it to. You're traveling the world doing a series of races, and every track's different, and depending on the weather and depending on the course, you're going to need different tires. But for us, we call it, we're it's runners. We don't have tyres, we have runners.
So what would be the differences in your runners?
It's the radius of them. So a fatter runner, like a thicker piece of steel, will run faster because the kind of surface area is more evenly distributed, whereas a thinner runner digs in more. But if it's snowing, the last thing you want to do is have a fatter runner trying to push through, like be a snowplow, essentially. You want to then go for a bit of a thinner runner. Equally, if you're on a track that's really technical and you're not that experienced, you can't go on a fat runner because they're harder to control. A thinner runner is easier to control. So there's a lot of different elements to kind of look at in an equipment choice, and it's so important that you do make the right decision. Again, we're talking a sport that's won and lost in hundredths of a second.
Yeah, tiny variables and so much to think about. I know that you're a little bit disappointed in your performance at the 2022 Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
And presumably you've had a bit of time to reflect on that. Can you tell us a little bit about what sort of went wrong?
Yeah, so 2022 Winter Olympics, probably my most disappointing race ever. It was such a graft to get there. And the whole experience when we were there, it was, it was a COVID games. The food was terrible. The living conditions weren't great. Just the food was not nutritious. It was not nice. And I don't think I actually ate a hot meal in the 3.5 weeks we were there. But I know every athlete's in the same boat. But the experience itself wasn't like Pyeongchang. It wasn't enjoyable, it wasn't amazing, there was not a lot of socializing allowed, and it was like one of those ones where it's like I can't wait to get on the track because that's what I love. But because of COVID, we were made to come out to the game so early. We were out there for so long waiting, and the competition came and we were prepared. And, the driving went well, but on the day, we just didn't go fast. And for one of the reasons on day one was, like I've just said, you have to get equipment choice really, really spot on. And in training, we were on a set of runners that were absolutely flying. And in the race, we weren't flying. And there was no major errors made that we overnight said, we're going to have to just take a risk and change the runners. And we went a lot faster in day two, but it was too late. That it was a disappointing race. We knew we had a result in there and we just didn't manage to show it, and at the time I was super disappointed. But now that, and this is the beauty of sport, you kind of have some time to reflect and you move on and you look back and go, no, wait, like it was one race. And it was just so happened that that one race had an Olympic Games, kind of title on it. If it was, any other World Cup race or a lower level race, you would just brush it off. And it is one of those things that, athletes are going to have failures, and success always comes with, like, you have to have failure before success, and you do have to be able to bounce back from it. So looking back, can't be too disheartened. I've had an absolutely amazing career. I've had some absolutely amazing races, and it's thinking, right, replicate them again and don't wallow on the not so good races.
I think you've definitely got the right personality to take it in the right way and to sort of improve on it moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, as an athlete, you have to. You can't get hung up on the failures because you can't keep looking back. You just have to look forward.
Definitely. So if we could look back, actually, I was kind of going there anyway. So what were you like in school? Were you very sporty?
Yeah, I was very sporty. I loved anything sport, from, I think, being able to walk. I wanted to do everything from netball, hockey, athletics, trampolining, dancing, football. Like, if there was a sport and I was able to do it, swimming, anything, I was involved. I love sport. I still love sport. I love watching sport and I love playing sport.
It's great because We have actually found that, obviously, if you're from up near Newcastle yourself, we found that there's not a huge amount of athletes in the Northeast, and it's really sad to see because obviously there's a great talent pool there. Yeah. Is it access to facilities, or what do you think it is?
It's access to facilities and it's access to coaching, and it's sad and it's the way it is, but athletes in the Northeast end up having to leave because there's not that big group of elite athletes there. So, you know, as for myself, I have no one to train alongside. The coaches that I want are in the South. You know, facilities, winters are really difficult, and when you need to be on a running track, it's really difficult to be running in the wind and the rain and the snow. But access to an indoor running track in the Northeast, it's really difficult, and that is something that I do want to change. Going through my full career as a Northeast based athlete, I can see kids in the Northeast do need more inspiration, more encouragement, and they do, you know, we do need to push for access of facilities. And, you know, when I was a kid, which was a long time ago, it was even worse again. But yeah, I think the Northeast kids do need, you know, Northeast athletes to come back and say, you can still do it. It doesn't matter. We can do it.
I think you're very well placed to do that, and I'm sure you'll inspire loads of kids through Sports for Champions as well.
I hope so.
I really think so. So obviously, without the facilities and without the coaching, it would take that extra step to obviously push yourself to sort of move out of your city and go and look for those opportunities. Is there anything in particular that really motivates you to sort of push on in the way you do?
I think it's just the love for sport and the love for the sport that you're competing in and having goals. And I think when you have a goal and you set a goal and you make a plan to achieve that goal, that's what gets you up every day. I would say that's it.
It's definitely one of the biggest recurring themes of the podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about the role of talent and hard work and how you think they play off against each other?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is that cheesy quote, which is talent beats hard work. Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. And I do see that, and I can kind of relate to that, because I do think with enough drive and willpower, there is no stopping you, and there's so many world-class athletes out there that will probably tell you themselves, I'm nothing special, I just work my fingers to the bone to make sure I'm the best version of myself. And working hard, it's massively important.
There's no substitute, is there?
No, there's not.
In the run-up to a competition, how often are you training?
So in the run-up to a competition, it's a bit of a funny one, because as a bobsleigh athlete, you have two versions of a week, and you have like your race week and you have it like a training week. So a typical training week would be training 6 days a week, but on a race week, we do drop the workload down, because not only do you need to keep your physical training in of your speed and your gym work and any little rehab bits, you also have to add in elements that you're now qualifying for a race. So you're now on the bobsleigh track 3 days a week or 2 days a week leading up to the race. So usually, and on top of that, I'll mention, we have to travel from venue to venue. So usually Monday is a travel day and a rest day. Tuesday, there'll be physical training and there'll be bobsleigh training. Wednesday will be a lighter physical training session. Thursday will be a bobsleigh session. Friday will be a rest day. Saturday a primer, and then Sunday the race. So the workload completely comes down in the gym and on the track, but you've got other elements coming in and being in your face that you have to account for them. But a normal preparation for a race, not the week before the race, normal preparation for races, 6 days a week.
Wow, so intense. And then how is your nutrition?
nutrition has to, it does have to be spot on, but bobsleigh, as I mentioned earlier, is a very different sport where you have to keep weight on. And when you're training hard 6 days a week, and you, you know, if your sessions are 2-3 hours long, and then you've got physio, and then you're out and about, you're burning so many calories that you have to keep getting the energy in. So eating well, but getting enough food in, and it does often have to be substituted with protein shakes and whatnot, just to help get calories in, because it's hard to eat, say, 3,000 calories a day. That's difficult to do with good food. It's very easy to do with a Domino's pizza and a bag of chocolates and a pack of Doritos, but it's difficult to get that amount of calories in eating well. So we're not as strict as other sports. I eat well, but I will cook with butter, and just trying to sneak extra calories in places. So not super clean, but eat well, nutritious, and plenty of it.
Yeah, it's still something that you have to obviously constantly think about. Even people might think, oh, because you get to eat so many calories that you can just eat whatever you want.
Yeah. But,
so you've obviously sacrificed quite a lot. Is there anything in particular that you miss about normal life, or maybe think I would have liked to have experienced a bit more of that?
One thing I will say is that I've not done Christmas shopping at home in 10 years.
Oh, no.
I don't get the lead up. I love Christmas, but I never get that lead up to Christmas excitement with the parties and the Christmas dinners and the Christmas shopping and listening to music. So I'm always on the road. And I'm another one is that I'm never home for my mum's birthday, which is in November. So those kind of little family elements around the festive period, I do miss them, but, you know, it is sacrifices that you do choose to make to compete for Great Britain and go to Olympic Games, and it's something to look forward to in retirement, that, you know, you can be around and do all those family things.
There is a lot of sacrifices, but I can also tell that you do really enjoy it also. Do you think the life of an athlete is tough compared to maybe other professions?
It's just completely different. Like, every profession has its challenges. Every profession has, you know, elements that make it tough, and they have sacrifices that they have to make. But for an athlete, I just think there's nothing like it. There's no other profession that lives in that world of being on the road and, you know, giving everything to a sport. And just like little things, people like often say to me in the summer, wow, like, it's amazing. Like, you wake up, you do your training session, and then you have your lunch, and your afternoon's your own. Like, you get to do all sorts, but you're so done in from training in the morning, you just fall asleep on the sofa. So we do live an absolutely amazing life, and no athlete can ever complain about it, because we live amazing lives. We get to train and stay fit and healthy, we get to travel the world, we get to represent Great Britain, and it is amazing. No one can ever complain, but it's not, I don't think it's as glamorous as some people look into it. You train, you fall asleep, you train, you fall asleep, and that's kind of how it works. Not a bad life, but not glamorous.
Do you have a favourite sporting hero?
I don't, and that's one question that I do get asked a lot. I do have kind of role models in my sport, one being Nicola Minicello, who brought me into the sport, and being a world champion for Great Britain. Great Britain are not a winter sport, like, not a winter sports nation. We don't have our own bob track, so to become a world champion in Great Britain in bobsleigh is amazing. So really do look up to Nicola Minicello. Another athlete is Steve Holcomb, who is a USA bobsleigh, and he went through a lot of struggles, and he wrote a book which is brilliant, and he was one of the best drivers of all time, like, as a bobsleigh driver. But yeah, one thing I will say is, growing up and getting involved in the sport, didn't massively have a hero at all, and I think it is a really nice thought to think that maybe you could, like, I could be someone's sporting hero, sporting inspiration, to go and, you know, go and achieve high in whatever sport they choose to do.
I don't doubt it. And do you have a favourite sporting quote?
Not a sporting quote, but I do have a quote that I really do like. Let me just get it right in my head before I say it. I think it's... every new day you have a chance to be better, or something along those lines. And I just really like it, that no matter what you've done today, no matter how disappointed you are, you wake up tomorrow and you get another chance to be better. And that is a quote that I do like.
That's brilliant. And do you have a favourite music to listen to prior to competing?
I'm so eclectic with my music taste. It does change a lot. I don't like to be too hyped up because I do have to be relaxed, and I feel like if I get too excited, I feel like it's a lot of energy wasted. Usually something like calm but energetic, and I don't really listen to music to inspire me or get me up a height. It's more of a distraction when I'm warming up. It's like, for me, when I don't like to think too much about the race until I get, you know, 15 minutes out of going to the start block, because the day is so long. Going to the garage, setting up the sled, putting the sled in the van, travelling to the bob track, walking the track with the coach, getting back up to the top, getting changed, having a snack, seeing the physio, going through your whole warm-up, coming back in, having a rest period, putting your kit on. It's too long to be thinking about the race the whole time, that music's almost like a distraction of, don't overthink too much about the race, just enjoy listening to music, relax until I get about 15 minutes out from the race. Then the music goes off and I'm actually thinking about what I want to execute.
Do you get nervous?
Sometimes. And when I do get nervous, I tend to perform better. I've been in this sport so long now that I'm so used to competing that sometimes you do need a little external factor, or you need to go to a tricky track, or you need something thrown in the mix to give you that little bit nerves to get you on edge to be able to perform. So yeah, sometimes I get nervous, but not all the time, no.
And is there anything that you do to try and calm the butterflies? I know people use breathing techniques, or maybe they've got a happy place they go to, them kind of things.
Yeah, I just kind of like, I think I just talk to myself in my head. Just say things like, just focus on what you're doing next. Or like bring myself back if I'm starting to get all nervous. Right, what are you focusing on next? And if I'm stood on the start block, it's probably how I'm going to attack the handle and put my first step down. So just having little cues of what you want to focus on can sometimes just bring you back to kind of ground level again.
I see. And the first person you call after a good performance?
To be honest, I don't get to call people, because I get calls coming in, and it's mostly my dad. But the thing is, with my dad, he does know when to leave me alone. So if I have a good race, he's the first person on the phone. But if I have a bad race, he knows, don't call.
And would you have any advice to young people looking to get into sport generally?
Yeah, my advice to young people would be, try as many things as you can. Take as many opportunities that get put in front of you, and if there's no opportunities in front of you, go and look for opportunities, because you never know where it can lead you. I didn't even know what bobsleigh was, and now I've spent the last 10 years of my life representing Great Britain and going to 2 Olympic Games. So just go and try. Don't be nervous, don't be shy, go and try something new and just get involved with as much as you can.
Awesome. And if someone was looking particularly at bobsleigh,
Someone's looking particularly at bobsleigh, run fast, jump high, and get yourself down to trials and try and get yourself on the Great Britain development team.
That's great advice. What are you looking forward to over the next couple of years?
So I'm in a place right now where, you know, I'm close to retirement, so I'm really assessing what my next steps are, and and what my next goal will be. It's not going to be another Olympic Games. Like, with my age and where I'm at, and I'm being super happy with my career, don't want to do another 4 years. I really want to start another journey. I want to be successful doing something else. And that's the beauty of being an athlete, is that even though it's daunting because your timeline is small and your career is capped, you get an opportunity to do more than one thing.
Yeah, I'm sure whatever you turn your hand to, you'll be amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
And finally, something that we like to ask all of our athletes, do you have perhaps like a favourite mantra that you repeat to yourself while you've been competing? So like, sometimes people say like, just send it, whatever, like, just send it, whatever it is, or maybe they're saying, I'm the best, I'm the best. There's a few different ones.
No, I don't really have anything that I say, but one thing that's a bit unique about bobsleigh is that there's two of you in the sled, and you can really bounce off each other's energy. So even though I might not be saying anything to myself, you'll be talking to your teammate a little bit, saying, right, come on, let's get it, let's execute, or whatever, and just kind of use each other's energy, which is usually, you know, it's one of my favourite things about bobsleigh, is that there is someone stood next to you on the start block, literally, like, right next to you.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really enjoyable talking to you.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
You're more than welcome. And thank you all for joining us as well. Make sure you give us a like, a comment, and a subscribe, and we'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye. Hi, guys. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, be sure to leave us a like and a subscribe, and check out all our other videos for some more great interviews and content. Bye.